Well, I'm Pat Ahern. My name's really Patricia Leona McCabe Ahern. And I was born in April 14th, 1927. Mm-hmm. And I will first talk about my parents, my grandparents. Okay, Grandma Curtis, who was called Molly by Grandpa, and her long name was Mary Frances Tennessee, and then her maiden name was Eads. And Grandpa was Samuel Perry Curtis, and they were both born in Arkansas. And he was a carpenter and rancher, and I think they moved to Texas, didn't they, before they started Oklahoma?
Yeah, they lived in Parrish, Texas.
Okay, well, they,
that's where
they
stayed. Aunt Nettie and Pearl were.
Yeah, and they stayed there for a little while, and then they moved to Texas. When they got ready to come to Oklahoma, Grandpa and his older two boys, I know Wilburn, and I don't know who the other one was. Maybe Sam, is he older?
No.
Yeah, who was the next older?
I think it was just Wilburn and
Grandpa. Maybe it was just Wilburn and Grandpa. They drove the cattle and what they had to Oklahoma, and Grandma came on the train with the little kids. And my mom always said that on the train, the story of her, she was about two, and she cried for cornbread. She didn't like that white bread that they offered on the train. And I thought that was
kind of cute. Can I interrupt just a minute?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, they took a boxcar and went to West Texas, you remember? That was Grandpa Curtis and Wilburn with some cattle and things. And then Grandma brought the kids and come to Elrond.
That's what
she
I said.
Was scared on the train.
Oh, scared?
Yeah, because she's scared of Indians.
Oh.
That's when Mom cried for cornbread. Then they went to West Texas and lived in that dugout.
Yeah, I've got that in here.
Okay.
They did live in a dugout at first.
Mom said it was scary.
And anyway, I remember Grandpa as being kind of strict about manners. You always had your hat off and at the table. They would never think about, like kids do today, putting your cap on your head. And he, one time, I remember I was carrying some biscuits to the table and dropped a biscuit. And I picked it up, put it back on the plate, and I got very much in trouble because he wouldn't stand for that. And then Grandma Curtis was always praying for her son, Wilburn, because he was on the wild side. And she told God that she'd quit chewing tobacco if God would grab his attention. And Wilburn, he eventually... was Aunt Molly's prayers were answered. And he became a Nazarene preacher. But he also was a carpenter
and a horse trader.
But if he needed money, he would just put on his cleanest shirt, you know, and have a revival. And that's the way he worked his way to California during the Depression. And he got to California where they could pick fruit and stuff. And anyway, then some of the Curtis family were Baptist, she said.
Hardshed.
And they maybe didn't go to church all every Sunday, you know, but they went. They were Protestants. And when Mom and Dad met and wanted to get married, Grandma said, no, you've got to wait 6 months till her little baby sister was 6 months old.
That was the only
and
one.
Help me with the work, you know. So she waited 6 months, and they got married in August 16th, 1916. Now, my dad's side, the McCabe family, came from Nebraska, and then they had settled there, but they made the mistake of co-signing for one of their older daughters and her family's land. Well, they all had hard times and lost the land, and he lost his. And so they migrated to Oklahoma, where they got this free land. I guess it was free, I don't know. But that's why they came to Oklahoma.
Yeah, it was homesteaded, and then Grandma McCabe got a patent from President in 1903 for that land. So they'd get patents, but they had to live there for 10 years.
So they had it free at first, but it wasn't very good land.
No, right.
And they had, let's see, Aunt Katie was the youngest, but there was Emma and Aunt Maggie, Margaret and Elizabeth, that was Aunt Lizzie. And they had John and Harry and my dad.
Well,
and then after,
Mary.
It was even after Grandpa McCabe died that she adopted a baby and from a mother who had died in the area. And the baby's name was Alma. And Alma lived to be over 100 years old.
Alma Stroud.
What I said, Alma.
You said Alma.
Well, however you pronounce it.
Alma.
I knew these aunts and uncles pretty well. And they were on the McCabe side. And then Harry homesteaded up in Ulysses, Kansas. and he and his wife lived there. And but during the flu epidemic of 1918, his wife died with the flu. He had no children. And he then moved to Oklahoma eventually and had farmed at Old Capels. And then when he was older and couldn't live alone, he lived in a little house near Grandma and Grandpa, or my mom and dad.
After and back, who's back's house?
Yeah. And then when he died, I'm very indebted to him because he left his farm. Well, and my mom and dad died. His place was the part of my inheritance in Kansas. And then Dorothy was sick at the time and needed the money, so we sold that, but we kept the mineral rights, thanks to Jean and Mom.
We went up there and we put an ad in the paper and we told them to write to whoever was interested in buying it. And I went with Mom up to Ulysses. And so we met and we called them. They come to the motel that night and they bid on it, you know. Not all together. And so this one guy, he had bid pretty good, but the other guy bid just about it, so that they was going to come back on Monday or whatever and see who we decided. Well, I told one of them, I said, well, I said, I don't know, you're pretty close. So he gave us more, but they kept the minerals, and so Pat and Dorothy still, their family still gets mineral money from them.
So anyway, I always say thank you, Uncle Harry.
Yeah.
Because it's been nice. And then I skip back. I don't know. You've already heard all about the tornado, so I'll skip that.
Actually, we didn't record about the tornado.
Oh, you didn't? Oh,
no.
Mine's exactly right. But in 1918, exactly the year of the tornado, I think so. 1919, okay. And because I knew Mildred Dorothy was born in 17, so it would have been 18. And a tornado destroyed their home. And Dorothy was, Grandpa grabbed her and went up into the air. And he was going to go out. They had a little rock storage house, and I think they were going to go out to that. And he was on his way. My mom went back to get Dorothy. Mildred.
She grabbed Mildred.
And anyway, it was just, it hit too soon. And so she didn't get Mildred. She went up by herself, but she was found later wrapped in the curtain was in the bedroom.
And kitchen curtain.
I thought it was the bedroom.
Well, anyway, whatever.
It was. One of those lace panels. Anyway, they'd found her after they came down. My dad was kind of in the center, he said, of the tornado. It was kind of in still, but he could see all the...
He had a big trace chain wrapped around him.
Yeah.
And Dorothy pulled out of his arms, and they couldn't find Dorothy. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I didn't know they couldn't find Dorothy.
They was hunting for her. Hunting for her, and she was under some boards and had nails in her back.
Okay.
And she was hurt, and Andy Lobb found Mildred down there by that pond. She was still wrapped in that curtain, but her hair was all muddy, but she wasn't hurt.
That's amazing.
Mom had her arm out of joint, so it blowed away Schweitzer's house, barn, but it didn't blow their house away. So neighbors started coming, you know, and they took them over to Schweitzer's, and they called the doctor, and they did have the telephones. And anyway, they called Dr. Wolf. He come out there. He told Mom to lay down on the ground on the floor, and he put his foot here and pulled her arm back in joint. She had cuckoo burrs in her hair. She had long hair, and she said they finally just cut her hair short because they couldn't get them cuckoo burrs out. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. That's the tornado story. And then I was only 3 when my Grandma McCabe died, and I remember her wake. In the olden days, they always take everything out of the living room and put the coffin in the corner and put the chairs around the edge, and you stayed up night and day with the dead person. Anyway, I remember seeing her in the coffin. That's one of my earliest memories. And let's see. And then I also remember Aunt Maggie, and she had a large family, I think 8 kids. And they lived on a farm, and it wasn't too far from us, so we would go play with our cousins and the barn swinging on the rope swings. And then I guess I was closest to my Aunt Katie Murphy, and she was the most educated person in the family. She was a nurse and very well read. She often quoted from authors, and she had 3 sons. We would play in the canyons and ride horses. Katie served in Europe during World War II.
She was a nurse.
World War I as a nurse. and traveled extensively in Europe when she was there. Katie met her husband, Leo, in a Texas hospital. He was a serviceman and came home from the war. And she was working there as a nurse. And she, they got to talking and found out they were from the same county in Oklahoma. And they ended up later on getting married. And Aunt Katie was kind of an emergency doctor and midwife in out in her area of Oklahoma, where she took care of people that delivered babies and doctored people that needed help. And she also gave a hand to Okies that were migrating to California during the Depression. Feed them.
She said she'd have at least 2 days stop. She'd give them eggs and stuff, you know, for them to go on to.
And then my dad and Aunt Katie, Barney and I would all, my dad and Aunt Katie would often talk politics. And they were both, of course, FDR fans and strong Democrats in their day. I was young and enjoyed listening to Aunt Katie. It was like reading a book. She also loved music, and she would have all the kids over to play music, and they'd clear out the living room and we'd dance. That's where I learned to dance. And I also liked to visit my aunts. Nettie, she was my mother's sister, and she had a player piano that we would pump with. Aunt Nettie Penrite. And when they later, when I was married and lived in Oregon, they would come to visit, and Uncle Irvin, her husband, he liked sleeping outside. He'd never sleep in the house because he wanted to breathe that cold mountain air. He was a lot of fun to be around. Let's see. Oh, and one time I took him on a camping trip, and I got an air mattress because I had Aunt Nettie and my mom, and I thought surely one of them would want to sleep
on
Junior's
them. And Junior was with them, too.
Yeah. They, neither one would sleep on that air mattress. They all wanted to be tougher than the other. So I slept on it. And Aunt Nettie could cook outside on a campfire. Well, she made us a delicious breakfast, you know. She was very good at camping out. Let's see. I don't want to make this too long. And then Aunt Emma, she lived out by the river.
That was the North Canadian River.
And I used, and Margie was her daughter, and we would go pick currants. And it seemed like every time I went there in the summer, the river was flooding. And we'd stand on the bridge and watch it flood. We thought that was not too much else to do, I guess.
Do you remember Daddy, Mom wanted to take us swimming, and he said, no, you can't take them until they learn how to swim. So we did go to the river when it was low.
Okay, my dad, that's Barney, liked to read, and he was a gifted mechanic. And the neighbors would call him to fix their machines. And he also had a large threshing equipment that he used, and sometimes he would go around to other farms to do his threshing. And he sang Irish songs, taught the kids to play cards, and told stories. He was a good Catholic, and we always were sure to go to Mass every Sunday. And he never spanked us. That was my mom. She was a disciplinarian. She did the spanking. And we didn't get too many, but when we did, we really deserved them when we got a spanking.
She said, this hurts me worse than it does you. We never could figure that out.
And one time, my brother Tom cut up some good harness to make a bridle for his horse. And that was the only time I saw my dad really get mad, and he did whip him with that leather. And my mom was a hardworking woman who ran the house with a firm hand. She was very headstrong and could do anything she set her mind to. My daughter Linda is most like her. She loved to ride horses. Her horse was Rainbow, but she didn't have much time to ride for fun. One time, though, she rode into El Reno for a parade, and that's a 44-mile... Well, that was later. 44-mile round trip she rode. And they always have that. It's a parade they have for the Land Rush, 89 is parade. And she also had to provide meals for the workers during the harvest. And I remember her doing these chickens. She could do a chicken, kill a chicken and clean it faster than anybody I ever saw. The only thing we really had to do was just pluck the feathers, you know, after she's gone. I tried it once, and I had a very hard time killing a chicken. I did it once, and I said, I had to do this every time I ate, I'd be a vegetarian. But then I found out, too, that there was a place in El Reno. Now, this was in 1951. You could take live chickens, and they would clean them and clean them all and freeze them. Cut them up and freeze them for 15 cents a piece. I thought, why does anybody clean a chicken? And then my Aunt Julia, I don't know if everybody knows about my mom's sisters and brothers. I mean, I'm not sure what they mean, but anyway, I used to visit her, and she lived in Madras a while, and then Elnora. We enjoyed visiting her because she lived in California and she had a beautiful home. Let's see. Oh, and in the summer when I was little, they would make these wooden platforms outside because it was really hot and have dances. And the kids, you always took your kids whenever you went someplace. And we would play or else we'd get out there and learn to dance. You know, we were taught how to do the waltzes and two-step and everything. And then Jack Murphy, I remember him as, that was my cousin Aunt Katie's son, playing his violin. And at midnight mass, he played O Holy Night. And it was so beautiful. And he was a very educated person. He even taught literature in Oxford in England. And back, he ended up in Boulder, Colorado, at the university.
He graduated from high school in El Reno when he was 14. And Mildred lived there then. She was studying at beauty college. And he was too embarrassed to ask a girl. So he asked Mildred to come to dance with him. She said, we danced every dance. And he was only 14 when he graduated from high school. He was smart.
And
one, he was all smart.
One day, when I was just little, too, I was skipping around too much, but it was wintertime, and the older kids were going in a sled to school in the snow. And I wanted to fall, and I followed them. I was probably about 3. And my mom noticed I was missing. So since it was in the snow, she followed my tracks and found me up the road in the ditch crying because I couldn't find him. And let's see. Oh, when I was little, we had fun just riding horses, playing house, climbing trees, and playing in the haystack. We just rolled down the haystack. We thought that was fun.
Another thing, you remember when we had old Hannah, we would be there in the corral, and that straw stack was down there, and we'd take turns. We'd dive off in the straw stack, and she'd go back, and you'd get on. We'd get on.
I don't remember that, but I don't know, but we thought it was fun. And
you
at school,
get hurt.
They don't have these anymore. They had what they called a box supper, and you'd make a lunch in a box and decorate it pretty, and then they would bid on it, different people, and buy it, and they used this money to help get school equipment or whatever they needed. But that was always a big occasion at our school. And the two big events of the year was the state fair in Oklahoma City and the Hinton Rodeo. That was the two things we did.
Yeah.
Both my uncles were Ed and Andy Curtis.
And they're the ones that started that RCA, Rodeo Cowboys Association, and they started it in Hinton.
And
Rodeo.
Ed was a bronc rider, and Andy was a bulldogger. And they're in the Cowboy Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I don't know, some of this I probably should skip. Oh, this is kind of interesting. When the cistern was dry, you know, during the days when we didn't have water down there, my mom decided that it needed to be cleaned, so she put a rope under our arms and let us down in the cistern to clean it.
It had a pole quite a ways down.
Anyway, there was
we'd hold the pole and she'd let us down.
That was Odelia and me and Jean. And we thought it was kind of fun. It was cool down there. And we cleaned up the little tiny bit of water that was there and cleaned it all up. But Jean got tired of it because Mom was leaving us down there too long. So she just shinnied up the pole, the pipe.
We kept hollering and hollering for Mom to come, and she didn't come. So I said, I'm getting out of here. It was probably about 20 foot deep.
Anyway, she went the pipe and got out. But we were scared. We didn't want to get in trouble. So Dee and I stayed down there until we got pulled out. And we hauled the water, you know, during the drought times from wells that had good water for the cistern.
That was called babysitting in that time.
Oh, just put them in a well.
Put them in a cistern.
And let's see, our dog's name was Stubby. That's not that important. But anyway, we enjoyed the dogs. And I liked more the girly things. And Jean liked the outside horses and stuff. But I liked dolls and making playhouses and cooking and sewing with my mom. But my other jobs were cleaning the chicken house, pumping water for the family to wash clothes. We we had to wash clothes in the soft water, so we pumped it and carried it to an iron pot that heated it. But there was so much lifting and carrying stuff. My mom made soap, lye soap, with the lard and lye, you know, that you make bars of soap to wash with. We'd have to cut that up for the wash machine.
Butchered pigs.
Yeah.
Butchered hogs.
But my dad never liked to kill his cattle because they were too big a pet. But we killed the pigs. I thought that was unusual. Yeah. We didn't have too much beef. Just went to town, we might have got some sometimes. Oh, my. I don't know. This is too long, isn't it?
Doing fine.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes we would get together with the neighbors, and they would sing and play the guitar and fiddles and whatever, and we would dance. And we didn't have a radio for a long time. I think 1935, we finally had a car that had a radio in it. And I remember sitting in the car listening to Joe Louis, Fox and Matches. Around 1942, they bought their first refrigerator and got electricity. Was that the year we got electricity?
39.
You thought 39.
Electricity.
Maybe we didn't get it.
They bought it in Calumet from Hunt Thompson's, and it was a Mayflower.
Okay. Before getting electricity, we used propane for cooking and kerosene lamps. The farm didn't get indoor plumbing until after I left home.
They didn't have propane. Remember,
what did they use in the kitchen?
Gas iron that I gave you.
Well, I don't know. What did you cook with?
Mom had kerosene.
That was in the cooking stove?
Yeah, Kola.
Okay. I didn't know Kola.
In that round tank, it was about that long.
Okay, it was Kola. Okay.
Then we even had a gas stove, you remember, and she'd pump air in it?
Well, I thought that was propane, so I was wrong.
No, it didn't have propane.
Anyway.
It'd catch fire and she'd drag it outside.
So,
blow it up.
Anyway, no, then, I don't think there's any more about my parents.
How did you heat the house before electricity?
Wood stove.
Wood stove?
Had a wood stove in the front room, and you had to go get kindling, remember?
Yeah. Would you cook on that some too?
No.
We never had a wood stove to cook on.
Okay.
But we had an iron. See, this iron, I took Pat one, she had two. Mm-hmm. Real heavy. It had a little round thing up here, and you put gas in it. Gas. Then pump air in it, and turn it on, and light it under there. Man, wasn't that dangerous? I still got.
I remember her dragging that cooking stove outside because it exploded.
I wanted to ask you both what you remember of the Depression and the Dust Bowl era living
out
there.
We didn't know it was bad, but we'd always turn our plates upside down.
Uh-huh.
I remember that, don't you?
Yeah, and I remember stuffing cloths under the windows so that it wouldn't.
She'd hang up wet blankets.
And,
I was too little. I didn't.
Well, you were 3 years younger than me, so I remember the dust storm and the clouds. They looked like big clouds of dirt coming. And at school, a lot of the kids were worse off than we were.
Yeah.
We noticed by lunches, some of them only had lard on their bread that they bought. And they finally got the program where they cooked soup or something. The teachers had a lot of work to do. They would have a kettle of soup or something.
Mm-hmm.
But we never went hungry because we had eggs and milk. And I never thought about being hungry. I guess we had potatoes.
I
don't know how our gardens grew without water. Well, I say we have to water everything now, but we did have potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember. You can make a lot of things.
And then you'd, somebody told Mom, don't you remember that time? She said, you put the eggs wasn't very much, and when you had a lot of eggs, you put them in that barrel in the cellar, put salt on them, and they all rotted. So we took them out, throwing rotten eggs.
But she made everything she could think of with eggs and milk. Pudding, gravy, I mean, you know, we ate.
So she had a dairy cow?
No, we had about three milk cows, and we milked cows every day. You'd go out and they'd know which ones would go out and drive them in, and they'd follow each other and come in. You'd milk them morning and night. Sometimes to keep the milk cool, you'd either hang it down in the cistern in a jar, bucket, gallon bucket.
Or put it in the milk trough where that jib water that had the...
It was cold.
It was cold. Anyway...
We didn't know it was poor.
Yeah.
We weren't poor compared to a lot of people.
Yeah, that... The ones that were really bad were the ones that were renting farms or sharecropping.
Black cats.
Right. Yeah, that didn't own their own land.
Didn't own their own land.
Yeah.
They had a grass on the farm that was called buffalo grass, and it didn't die. Mm-hmm. But we just had dirt paths out through it. I mean,
rabbits, a lot of rabbits.
We walked barefooted everywhere. And
you remember,
we'd go get the cows.
We lived about a mile from the Blackjacks.
Yeah.
We were glad we didn't live in the Blackjacks. They were scrub oak trees, mm-hmm. and that's what we called them, because most everybody out there were real poor. And they, I mean, you know, they just rented their land or something. Anyway, I don't know, I guess that was discrimination, but we thought that was really good. We didn't live in the Blackjacks.
Well, I'll skip on to
what
when I left home.
What? What are you skipping?
Oh, just not too many, much.
I thought it was all interesting.
It's all interesting. Yes.
Well, we thought it was talking too much.
Anyway, when I was older, I went to school like Jean did at El Reno when I was... I didn't go there until I was a junior in high school. I went first 2 years at Calumet and rode a school bus. Mm-hmm. And then I went to town and worked for my room and board. But before that, I had met my husband. My older sister, Mildred, married my husband's brother, Bob. And my parents had a 25th anniversary, and they had a picnic at the park, and they invited them because they were related to Mildred. And that's where I met my husband, because he came. And I, you know, we were just kids, but I thought that he looked pretty cute. He was a lot of fun. He had a good sense of humor and had a lot of friends. Or we got a... And so anyway, he was at that same school, so that was good. And we went to ball games and that sort of thing. And that's the way we got acquainted. But I went my senior year then on to San Angelo, Texas, and graduated. And I stayed with Mildred and Bob and helped Mildred with the kids. And I was there with her third... boy, Mike was born. And at the same time, my husband graduated the year before, and we weren't married then, but he left and went mm-hmm. in the service. And
Marines.
Yeah, he went into the Marine Corps. Anyway, then when he came back, we tried to make a living in Oklahoma after we got married, but it didn't work out too good. Things was bad times. So we moved to Oregon, where he had relatives up there. Had a brother, and we got along fine then, and it went. But in Oklahoma, oh, I did put that part that was kind of neat. Oh, I think that's when we came back. We went to Oklahoma. I'm in Oregon and got a job. But after 2 years, Barney was always thinking about his family, and his brother got really ill, so we came back. Mm-hmm. And while we were living here then. My dad had loaned him money for a service station, but that didn't work out too good. And then he took another job, carting trains, and then he took another job. He worked two jobs after he lost the station, working at a tire shop, you know, putting tires on. And nothing was very good, so we decided to move to Oregon, which we did. And one time my dad came in when we were in Oklahoma and asked Bobby, my second son, does your dad ever come home? He said, sometimes to change his shirt. That was about the size of it. So we were happy to go back. And I put in here, let's see. Oh, we drove all the way and without hardly stopping. One time we slept along the road. But we got outside of Bend, and I felt that cool mountain air and saw the mountains, and I felt like we had arrived. I didn't miss the heat and poverty of Oklahoma. Let's see. And when we always called Bernard Barney, Bernard, but when he got to Oregon, they changed his name to Barney. They thought Bernard was too hard to say.
And the Indians anyway, called him Red.
Yeah, they did. And in
red hair.
Way, we raised a family of eight. We had Linda and Bobby and Shannon, and then Mike, Danny and Joanne and Tony. And they're all doing very well today. They're all happy. Let's see. We've got Bobby is in real estate, and Shannon is a businessman that owns a building and has a lot of, he takes care of a lot of things. He's very active. He's also active in his church, and he's a missionary sometimes in Nicaragua. He was down there for 3 years, but he's back in Spokane now. And then, Mike is a county commissioner and a realtor, and he lives in Madras. And Danny is a judge. He is a county judge for two counties. And then Tony is a newspaper editor. So they're all very successful. And Laura was a teacher, and now she's retired. And Joanne's a teacher now. And Linda's retired. She was a stewardess. And we're all very happy and scattered. Most of us are in Oregon. We've got Linda in Colorado. And in the wintertime, Joanne, or Laura, is in San Diego, California, because she has a little daughter that was paralyzed in an accident, and she's still mentally fine, so she has to take her to a warmer climate for school, and she has to stay with her all the time, and she's her nurse.
Her name's Teresa, and she was 21 last November, and she always said before she was, or when she was younger, she said, I'm going to Las Vegas and celebrate my 21st birthday. Sure enough, they all did.
They didn't think she would live that long.
And Jean, you should have been there.
Yeah, I couldn't
make it.
It was a lot of fun. And she's a smart little girl. And it's very good that when she was hurt really bad in this accident when she was 3. But it was the car seat company that was the fault. It threw her out of the car seat. So she got enough settlement that give her money, you know, all of her life until they settled pretty good because they thought she would die. But she's outliving their settlement, so that's good. And she's
being well managed.
She's doing very well. And I'm so happy that she's so bright mentally, you know, and enjoys school. And Laura's going to college for her second time. But she's enjoying it. Good. They wish they could be here, but they weren't able to make it. It's hard to try. Okay, well, that's about all I've got to say.
I didn't tell about my kids.
Tell us about
Terry
kids.
Told about them.
Well, he didn't have it. They don't have it.
Didn't have it. Yeah.
Go through them.
I won't leave you out, David.
Yeah, tell them about your kids. And also about you own the farm today, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that and kind of what's been the
future
of the farm.
When Mom died, well, she had, we helped her. David was in high school, and she knew how she wanted to divide it, and she drew a picture out. She gave Odia this 128 acres over here in the southwest quarter, and part of it and part of it over here. Anyway, she gave me the house and 126 acres in here that Daddy owned three quarters. That's 380 acres. Mildred had her part over here. Tom had his part over here. Okay, I bought Tom and Odia's part. But the only way I could done it at all, because we didn't have any money, is I rented it out to some guy. And I took bids on rentals. And so this guy, he's pretty wealthy. He said he couldn't rent from his wife because she charged him too much for her farms. So it was Ed Rother from Okarchee. But anyway, he rented it for several years until Terry took over. But that's the way I got Odia and Bob paid off. Odia paid off, and the way I got Tom paid off. And then Mildred still has hers, and Mike and them. Some of them sold their minerals, but we kept our minerals, and I got them divided up with the boys. But anyway, that's how we come. And Terry loves it out there because he grew up more or less with Mom and Daddy a lot. I mean, he stayed with them a lot. And Larry never was a farmer. Terry was. Terry liked it. So when Terry retired from the fire department, well, he has cattle. I think he's got about 165 right now, steers. And him and his son-in-law, Steve Groner, they raise them. Cattle prices gone out of the sky. He bought some not too long ago, say, average 450 pounds. They cost over $1,000 a piece. That is high. That's highest he's ever had to pay. But anyway, he likes it, and he goes out there every day. He lives 25 miles, and he drives back and forth every day. Larry lives in Sugar Land, Texas, and he's retired from the telephone company. He worked for another company, Lincurd, out of California for several years, and then he wound up in Sugar Land and working for that Sugar Land telephone company. And he won't come back to Oklahoma. He says, too cold up there. I said, buy you a motorhome. Come up here in the wintertime and go back down there in summer. I meant to, you know. And so And Jimmy, his son, lives in Denver, and he won't even move up there. Larry's stuck. He's in a bachelor salon. He's got his bed in his front room. Anyway, he's fine. He's different. And so David and John are in business together. They build wooden storage buildings. They call it Western Portable Buildings. It's about 5 miles west of Yukon on Route 66. And anybody I see that I think might need a building, I'll try to sell them a building. So I keep them busy. But anyway, they got a couple of guys that works for them and helps them. David does all the running around book work and getting supplies and stuff. And John takes the guys out and helps build the buildings. Mm-hmm. And Steve, he worked for that same company that Larry did for a long time, Linkert. It's electric company, and they put in a lot of what do you call them things they put in, David?
The switching equipment.
And then he worked for another guy too for a while. Now he drives trucks, those lift trucks, and delivers them all over the United States. Mm-hmm. He don't like to go back east. He said there's too much traffic. But he has been through West Virginia. But he can't take anybody with him, and he's on a schedule, so I haven't never got to go with him. And so anyway, and then John, he helps David. I mean, he's in partnership with him. And they all live right close except Larry. And Terry's keeping the farm for sure. And he keeps it spotless, mows the grass up there by the house and keeps everything spotless. Yeah, I said, not too many people come out there, but he said, well, it'd be nice if they do come. So anyway, it looks good.
The last time I was out there, they had a big interior refinishing project going.
I never finished it because
it's still in process.
Well, it's got the concrete floor and all, but the walls, the cabinets are not put back in there or not. Mm-hmm. And then Steve raised the roof on the house in the front room, mm-hmm. and I still haven't got that finished.
I was just curious.
Yeah, I still did like it was. They built that main part of the house was small. I don't know the dimensions, but it was small when Daddy and Mom built it. It had two bedrooms. And there was how many of us? Six? Tom slept in that old house that was out there. First he had Mom fixed him that bed in the kitchen, that little piece, and that was Tom's little piece. Anyway, she made it, turned it into a kitchen, when we sat back there in the place, playing spoons. Remember playing spoons? Mm-hmm. And Mom would get so excited, play cards around that round table. Well, the round tables and all are still in the storage out there, and haven't never put them back in there. And we just sold it, got rid of the old refrigerator that she'd bought in 73. It finally conked out last year. and we bought it. It was a green one. And it didn't quit running because you sold it, didn't you, David, to those guys? Mm-hmm. But it was using so much electricity, I got a small one and put out there because Terry has to have a refrigerator. And they have that rural line. And the electric bill is about $29 a month. But he's got a light. Yard light, mm-hmm. that refrigerator. But that refrigerator lasted that long. I could not believe it.
How much are you saving on electricity now that you got rid of it?
Oh, probably maybe $5-$10 a month.
That's up.
Just on that one refrigerator. But anyway, I couldn't believe it lasted that long. We bought it in Oklahoma City. And anyway, I live in Yukon. We lived in Okarchee off and on was in the bakery business 23 years, and Bill was from South Carolina, and we'd moved down there back 2 or 3 times. I've driven that road 100 times probably.
I didn't even say what Barney did.
Well, he was,
he went to, first he was worked in that little store at Warm Springs, and then Safeway for about 14 years, and then we opened our own convenience store. Oh. Mm-hmm. And it was better than, and then our kids could work with us because at Safeway they don't allow relatives to work together. So
he also said he didn't say he got wounded in Saipan.
Oh, well,
which was bad.
People know that. So.
No, that's the that. And it was World War II, and you visited Saipan later.
Well, yeah. Well, you there's too much. I don't want it to say too much. It's supposed to be about the McCabes.
But anyway, I took. They didn't have a laundry in Yukon. I mean, Okarchi, and I didn't have a washing machine, so I had. Was you with me, David, or just Steve and John to go to the laundry that time?
Steve and John.
Okay, and John was about 3, 4, I guess, and Steve. Anyway, I'd go to El Reno once a week and do the laundry, and so I'd come back, and you could burn trash out and back in a barrel, and there Bill was burning trash, and it had piled wood there, and I said, "What are you doing?" "I'm burning the tables. I quit." I said, "What in the world are we going to do?" And we had 3 kids still at home. And he said, "I don't know, I'll sell pencils on the street, but I'm not going to bake anymore." So we quit the laundry, quit the bakery business. And we moved to Oklahoma City for about 6 months. And then we found a house in Yukon and we bought it. Needed remodeling and refixing because it had been burned. And we fixed it up in 1970 and lived there ever since. And worked out. And then we built some houses. After that, we built some houses out at Richland, about 8 miles from Yukon. We built some houses. So I've got one left that I rent out, and we sold the other ones. That's about it. Is that enough?
You were starting to tell a World War II story?
I told her to tell it. Yeah.
No, I just told about it when I was going to high school and lived in San Angelo. He was in World War II.
Okay.
And he was a Marine and fought in Saipan, the battle in the South Pacific, and was wounded. And then actually he was probably in the hospital recovering from his wounds longer than he was in the war. But because then he spent a year sometimes in San Diego and then on a hospital ship and then finally back to Norman, Oklahoma, where he got released. But he had serious injuries, but he recovered. And we got married then after he came home. I think he got out of the service in 1945 in July, and we got married in August of 45.
A story that I think Laura wanted me to tell that fits in with this.
Well, why don't you come and tell it?
It's short. I can tell it from here. My voice carries. That when Dad was in the hospital, you know, Mom hadn't seen him since he'd left to go to war, and they were planning on getting married when he got back. And Mom went with his parents to San Diego to see him in the hospital. And he told my sister years later, after I was probably had left home, he says, "You know," he said, "I was so afraid when my mom saw how bad I looked, she wouldn't want to marry me anymore." So I thought that was a good story. You know, I think of that about that when I see some of these guys that get so badly wounded. That one that just got his award, you know, for bravery, he was in such bad shape, and they really did a good job of putting him back together. I mean, he's scarred, but he still looks good. Mm-hmm. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
So anyway.
And Bill was in World War II. He was just in the Army, but he was a truck driver, and he was pulling up. He was in the 2nd Division, 9th Infantry.
He was a truck driver? I thought for some reason he was a cook.
No, he was in the CCCs, he was a cook in the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps. And he was pulling a gun behind his truck, and there was supposed to have been 6 guys on the crew, and he was driving, and he landed the night, evening of, on Normandy, the evening
D-Day.
Of the, anyway, he said that when he, they had it fixed, so whenever you drove off in the water, that it wouldn't drown out. He had carburetor covered and stuff. And he had to stand up and guide it with his foot, stand up so he could see over, you know, see the water. And he said he drove out. And when he got situated and all, there was only 3 guys with him. 3 of them got killed, or 4, 2 of them got killed. But anyway, he said it was terrible because you'd drive up on the beach, and the water was red, and you had to drive over bodies.
Well, we saw that on TV not very long ago on D-Day. It was the anniversary of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He got wounded 6 days later at Saint-Lô, France. Mm-hmm. Saint-Lô, that's when he. And for some known unknown reason, he was in England for about 6 months, and then they sent him back to South Carolina. And for some unknown reason, he wound up at Warden General Hospital in Chickasha for some reason. Then he'd come up to El Reno, and that's where I met him. And he also brought George Marosco, his friend. That was your mom's first husband.
I never heard that.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know
that. Tell us what you know about that.
Yeah, well, I knew George. That's when I met George, too. They come up for the week, take us to movie or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And because we lived down on 1009 South Rock Island whenever we lived with Mildred and O.D. and Pat. O.D. Worked over at Tinkerfield.
I didn't live there with you two kids, but that's all right.
For a few, maybe a month or two.
Yeah, I might have.
But anyway, O.D. was living there. So anyway, he brought one guy up, a friend of his, Buddy. O.D. didn't like him. So the next weekend, he brought George, and he was from Pennsylvania, Wilkesboro, Pennsylvania. Anyway, he was funny. He could drink a Coke, and you'd think he'd drink six-pack. He'd start laughing and telling stories and everything. But he was funny. But anyway, she got married in Wilkesboro, and Mildred and Mom went. No, they went with him when he got killed. Anyway, they lived together about 5 years, and he died on November the 9th of 1950 up at Okemah. He was working on the highway department, and your mom was keeping the books and things. And he was working, and they had a big rock crusher, and he pushed this rock down with his foot, and it pulled him down. And they took him on to the hospital at Okemah, and then they went and got Odia. She didn't know it. And they took her to the hospital, and when she got there, he had already died. And she said, "Where's so on?" Well, he went on, and she thought they took him to Oklahoma City. And he died. But anyway, that was George Marosco. But he was funny. And then she met Bob when she was living with Etta over in Oklahoma City. That's when she met Bob, because she was still working at Tinkerfield. And that's when she met Bob Baxter from Elkins, West Virginia.
I haven't heard much about that either.
She might have met him then. So he had been in the service. Didn't he land on
Normandy.
Was it Normandy or one right next to it?
He was on D-Day in the Normandy invasion.
But yeah. There was another beach. It was all
Utah Beach, right?
It was Utah Beach.
Utah Beach. Yeah, it was all beach, but it was separate, called separate. Yeah. But he was landed on D-Day, too. Yeah, so that was bad. But anyway, they survived, and just look at the bunch.
So, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord, yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know if there's anything else you want to ask me or not.
Do any of you all have questions for me?
It was kind of interesting that George's parents were really upset with Odelia because she wasn't having any babies. Something's wrong with Odelia.
I wonder who the trouble was. All right, we know now.
She's told me that story.
Yeah.
Praying and praying for babies.
Also with strong warnings on my own personal behavior when I was a young woman.